Actually, so the last thing we were talking about last week, where we were talking about free will, or rational things lose their free will, I actually saw that Ratzon HaKoye, well, I've mentioned him in the past, is one of the great Jewish thinkers of the 19th century, a great Rebbe, the Rebbe Lublin. He actually makes that point on this issue with Vashti, and he says that, in fact, Megillah in general demonstrates this principle that laid Melech Yad Hashem, that the hearts of God, the hearts of kings are in the hands of God, meaning that things which happen to choices which a king must make, which have to do with the destiny of the world, are not necessarily within his own purview, but rather may be manipulated by our Kodesh Baruch Hu. Right? Everybody remember that from last Thursday? We had some nice chat about that. So that's actually what he says, that's the lesson of a lot of the things in the Megillah. So we have seen that actually in Pesach Yudei, that's what it is, in verse 12. That's Mei Malka Amalka Vashti Vavodit Varambela, the Vashti refused to come in the word of the king. And we say that God arranged things that she wasn't going to come. Asher Yadav Kerasim, which was given through the chamberlain, by itself, Amalekh Ma'ol, become a so bar rubbo. And the king was very upset, and his anger burnt within him. Now, it's interesting thing, because you figure, just to recap what we're doing here, you figure, we're going through all the places which we can get to this week, where it says Hamelech in the Megillah, and trying to figure out how it alludes to Hashem. Right? So the question is in this passage, by itself, Hamelech Ma'ol, become a so bar rubbo. It says the king was very angry, right? And it became very intense, it says here. And his anger burnt in him. So the question is, why is God getting angry? What?
That
well, so I would say that that's the case, right? In other words, according to the simple meaning, Ahasuerus is upset because Vashti didn't come. According to the underlying meaning, Hashem decreed at this time that the Jews were going to have to suffer because they went to Ahasuerus' party. Okay, so therefore, Hashem says, you know, the king said, consult with the experts who knew all the times. For such as God, king's procedure to turn all those who knew love judgment. Now, the difference is because Gemara in Sanhedrin actually uses this pasuk and the next pasuk, where there are seven sages who know the times, to say that in order to sanctify the new moon, to make Kiddush HaChodesh, you need seven sages. Because it says here that you need seven sages who are Yodei Ha'itim. Hi, these are Persian sages. They're not Jewish sages, right? But nevertheless, the Megillah alludes to knowledge of time and links that to these seven individuals, right, whoever they were. So therefore, from that, one extrapolates that you need seven people in order to determine the Jewish calendar by adding a month. That's one of the opinions where we get seven from. Normally, in Jewish court, you only need three, or 23 for capital crime, or 70 is great convention, but there is an opinion that for sanctifying the new moon, you actually need seven. So it's one of from this topic. Okay? Which is an interesting thing, because obviously that's taking the question at a very different level than a simple level, again, which has to do with Ahasuerus consulting his counselors. In terms of taking the Hamelech as being God, if you'll note, beforehand, it says by the Saritim, the chamberlain, you know, literally a Sarit in English is a eunuch. Right? There's a lot of eunuchs in this book. The old Persian harems, you know, that's what the men were castrated in order for them to be able to serve the king the way without any suspicion. So those seven from before were in part of Yud were Bisav Mahuman Bisav Harvona Bisav Vatsa Veta Vechata. So they are Shivatsa Sarasim Amishosim Mitzpeh Melech Achashverosh. They were the ones who served Achashverosh. Right? These seven down here, Kashna Shetar Adnosa Sashit Merech Maizna Mimuchan, are Shivatsa Veta Vatsa Madai, the seventh nobleman of Persian Madai, were eight Pnei HaMelech, the ones who see the king. Here doesn't say HaMelech Ahasuerus. Before, by the Saritim, it said they were the servants of the king Ahasuerus. Here it just says they were the servants of the king. According to our principle, whatever says the king Achashverosh, it means Achashverosh. And whoever says the king, it means not just Achashverosh, but God. So I think that it's obvious that these seven people here were part of the governing council. And since they're part of the governing council, so they're part of this master plan which Hashem is developing. Not only that, it's very important to know that Chazal say that Memuchan, who's going to speak up a little bit further down, was, who's Memuchan? Haman. Was Haman, yes. So it's interesting because Haman is setting the stage for his own downfall, right? Because as a result of this business, Vashti being executed and Esther being taken, eventually he's going to have his downfall. And I think that might be why he's called here Mimuchan. The word Mimuchan, the name Mimuchan, probably comes from the word Muchan. What does Muchan mean?
Ready.
Ready, prepared, right. So here Haman is preparing his own downfall. He's making, setting the stage for himself to have his later downfall. He thought, of course, he was doing something to curry favor with the king, which in the short term he probably was. But it did not have the impact in the end which he desired it to have. So let's see this psukim again. So Vayomer HaMelech, put the Gimel again. The king said, meaning Hashem, Lachachomim, to the people who Yodeh-Itim, the people who knew the times. In other words, the Yodeh-Itim is even though it says he knew the times in the sense with Chazal, when they extrapolate from this, so Kiddush HaKadosh is talking about the times of the year, the calendar, but here it probably means, in simple meaning, it means those people who knew how, you know, the zeitgeist, what was going on in the world, and how to deal with public opinion in the Persian Empire. So therefore they knew what the times were and how to deal with it. So Hashem said to these guys, again, Achashverosh is putting them on a simple level, but Hashem behind the scenes is setting the scene with these seven people to actually set up the scene for Esther to come and be Achashverosh's new queen. And he came by Hamelach to make Kodeh Be'gas within. It seems that what we're saying here is that Hashem's word is before all those who know judgment and law. In other words, in laying down certain laws, I don't know which ones, but I've seen laying down certain laws which are of critical importance to a nation, Hashem has to inspire or direct certain things which go on in the country's courts of law. And just like Jewish judges are held to be representatives of God on this earth, and that they're supposed to bring peace to the world, which is the greatest aim of judgment, so too, a non-Jewish judge, ideally speaking, on whatever level he's functioning, also is supposed to bring, you know, peace and tranquility, or on the other hand, will bring corruption and, you know, deceit into the world. So there are certain things which Hashem steps in and dictates to them what to do. So they are the people who are again, Korah, they love, they're close to Kiddush HaKadosh, and Hashem here has what to do with them as well. Kashor HaShem Tadmas HaTashish Merz Marmas HaMumuchan Shivat Tarei Korach HaMadai, the seven officers of HaMadai, raising their mouth would see the face of the king, Hayashim Shama Chutz, who sit first among in the kingdom. Another, Haman was a fascinating fellow. We have to see them in Megillah a much greater extent later on, but Chazal holds that Haman was, first of all, he was Jewish. Secondly, he was a Talmud Chacham. Right? Is that clear?
What?
Oh, yes.
It's an Amalekite. How could he be Jewish?
First of all, it's not even sure that he's an Amalekite.
Nothing sure. He likes that.
Excellent. Jeff is always the third about this class, and nothing is sure in this class. I have so much pleasure just getting him to be unsure about that. You should know, it just turns me on when you say things like that. Okay, so let's talk about Haman a little bit. Haman, first of all, says later in the Megillah that Haman comes to Achashverosh and says, I'm going to give you 10,000 talents of silver. And the Chazal say that 10,000 talents of silver, Haman says, corresponds, I'm giving them to you, I want to give you because they're corresponding to the 600,000 half shekels which the Jews gave in the desert. And the Vilna Gaon has an exact reckoning, how the 10,000 talents is reconciled as being 600,000 half shekels. They're very strange, right? If you were a simple, you know, non-Jew, what do you believe in? Why are you giving this amount of money? What are you hoping to accomplish with that? The rabbis also say in a very strange message, they say that Haman built a tree which was 50 amos high because he wanted to enter into the 50 gates of understanding, the 50 gates of Bina, of understanding. Moreover, the rabbis say about Haman that the earlier there had been a military campaign which Haman and Mordecai, this I'm sure many of you heard, Haman and Mordecai went out as generals, right, and they got various, they each got an equal amount of supply, and Mordecai carefully conserved the supplies, and Haman squandered them, and then Haman eventually came to Mordecai to ask him for supplies for the war, and Mordecai said, fine, if you'll agree to be my slave, and Haman was purchased by Mordecai as a slave, and that's part of the story that whenever Haman walked by, they didn't have any paper to write on, so they wrote on the bottom of Mordecai's shoe. And whenever Haman walked by later on in his royal, you know, garb, so Mordecai turned up his shoe where it said that Haman was his slave, and Haman got very upset as a result. But that was, of course...
So I would write him on the bottom of
what?
Shoe?
Well, actually, it's interesting that there was a custom like that, right? Haman or Amalek on the bottom of the shoe and have it worn out. Also, another thing that there was a great rabbi, I forget who it was, Whenever he used to test the new pen to see if it was working, he would write on Molek and cross it out. Tim says they are Molek, so we're on Molek and cross out the word. So I love that. Anyway, that ever a slave was bought by a Jew, a non-Jewish slave, non-Jew was bought as a slave by a Jew. The Jew has to give him milah and tefillah, right? He has to circumcise him, and he has to put him in a mikvah. What? Right. So now, luckily, that Mordecai, probably Mordecai went and tabled Haman in the game of Bris Milah and tabled Haman in the mikvah. Moreover, and about the Amalekite issue, there's a fact in Yerushalmi. The Bible doesn't hold this way. You know, we have two Talmuds, the Babylonian and the Yerushalmi Talmud. So the Talmud Yerushalmi, it says that Haman was not actually an Amalekite, but he took Amalek to be his, the philosophy of Amalek, to be his guiding philosophy. And later on he was called Haman HaAgogi. Agog was the king of Amalek who was killed by Shmuel. We're going to talk about him in next week's Haftorah, the Haftorah Parshas Zohar. So the Agog was the king of Amalek, and you know, I guess the last great king of Amalek who was killed then by Shmuel. So when Haman called himself an Agogi, much as somebody today who was, you know, a neo-Nazi might call himself a Hitlerite. Not that he's descended from Hitler, right? But he holds a Hitler's philosophy, right? So to Haman, he wasn't necessarily descended from Agog, but he was a philosophical adherent of Agog's philosophy. So therefore, it's not clear, that, according to Yerushalmi at least, that he was literally from Amalek genealogically, but philosophically he adopted the Amalek approach. But the thing is, obviously, according, if you assume that he's Jewish, or maybe he's not, maybe he's not religious, but certainly these Midrashim seem to indicate that Haman knew that he was fighting God, fighting the Jewish people, rather, not just on a physical level, but also on a spiritual level. Because all these things that she's doing, the money, the tree, all that stuff seems to indicate that he had awareness of the spiritual nature of his war against the Jews. And the fundamental concept which underlies Amalek is something which we've discussed here in the past, Asher Korcha Bader. It says that in this example of Maskir, in the Parsha Zohar, says that Amalek happened upon you on the way. Asher Korcha. The word Korcha comes from the Hebrew word Mikre. Mikre means happenstance, a coincidence. Right? Something which happens by chance. Oh, it's right here behind it. Is that what Rabbi Reif was doing?
No.
You sure about that? So the idea of coincidence in this respect is that there's a capacity, which is the theory behind Haman and Amalek, there's a capacity to defeat Hashem on his own terms. Meaning, Amalek doesn't represent the denial of God. They can't deny that God exists, especially in light of where we see Amalek first fighting the Jewish people right after, you know, they left Egypt and right after after the Red Sea was split, and they come and fight against the Jews, even though obviously God is on their side. Right? They're going to be nuts. Why are they doing it? So Amalek's approach is that God made certain rules in the creation. Right? The world was created, and God made certain rules by which he abides. Perhaps they voluntarily abide by them, but he has to play by the rules once he made them. So that means that even if God made a special relationship between himself and the Jewish people, Amalek's perspective is, you know what, it's possible sometimes to undermine that relationship. If I get the right time, the right moment in time, then I can undermine that relationship and take over. How so? For example, Amalek is linked very often to Bilam. Bilam and Amalek have all three letters the same. I am Mem Lamed. Amalek, Bilam. So there's a link there. Don't ask me about the base of the cliff. I don't remember exactly how they deal with that, okay? But they make a link between the two of them. And by Bilam, it says when he came to curse the Jews, so it says God didn't get angry those days. Why? Because God gives Bilam all of great power was that he knew how to figure out the moment each day in which God gets angry, so to speak.
When the crow.
When the crow over the rooster's comb turns red, turns white, the whole thing is a big thing there, the Gemara says the brothers. So the Gemara says that Hashem didn't get angry those days because he didn't want Bilam to have the opportunity to get that moment and, you know, kind of sneak in and destroy the Jewish people by saying the wrong thing at that time. So it's a very strange Gemara, right? Why can't God, the obvious question is, why can't God get angry and let Bilam try to say something and just ignore Bilam? You know, we'll come and solve it to him and say, yes, I'm angry, but you as well, you say it's meaningless, right? So obviously, the Gemara is saying that that will not be playing by the rules. And God is, to a certain extent, bound by the rules with which he made the Bria. If you made the Bria, you made creation with this rule in mind, that somebody who gets at the right moment in, inserts himself precisely at the right moment, has tremendous devastating force, even to the point of destroying the Jewish people, then he's got to play by those rules.
Why, I don't understand why anybody, or how anybody can say that God has to play by the rules.
Fair is fair.
What do you mean fair is fair?
He's God, if God made the rules, there's good rules, right?
No.
So if the good rules, he has to be good, right?
Yeah, but the effect of people, I mean, some people might, in order to teach them to a person, you might have to do something different about the rules. You have to change those in a certain way.
Right, so the thing is that that's what they say, we shouldn't say that even miracles have rules. In other words, sometimes things have to be changed, but even then they're changed within certain limitations, right? God does not make miracles which totally disrupt the world. They'll change things, but they won't totally disrupt the world because God likes the world. So therefore, they'll make the minimal miracle necessary, and there's certain things which don't happen, right? For example, you know, instead when in the Midbar, right? Well, how did God make the Jews eat? By giving them money, right? He could just make them not hungry for 40 years, right? Let them survive without eating for 40 years. So he can do that. Moshe Rabbeinu survived for 40 years without eating. Why can't they survive 40 days? It's just a matter of proportion, right?
Moshe never ate.
No, he did it for 40 days, didn't he?
Oh, for 40 days.
40 days. So why can't he do that for all of you? So the idea is, of course, Hashem doesn't do this. Hashem makes the miracles as natural as possible. Okay, he has to give more, but he's not going to make it as if they don't have to eat at all. And so on and so forth down the line.
Excuse
me?
They didn't eat for that, which is
unnatural.
They could have thought it because they weren't eating so much.
No, the food had no vegetables. No byproducts. What broth did you make on, by the way?
Shashamayim.
I'm out to laugh, I'm in Hashemayim.
I'm afraid last night.
Was it a skit? And said seriously or not seriously?
I'm not going to make that a cereal. Someone said if the oil was kosher, he said it.
Okay, it is brought down actually in Tokyo that the mom they made it brought out mostly welcome in Hashemayim. But anyway, this thing was come on.
What if I want God to stop the sun from prolong the day with the
afternoon? Yeah.
Let's call
it
self in nature.
No, as a matter of fact, it's not because whatever happened there, it didn't happen in the rest of the world. Time went on in the rest of the world. Well, I don't know exactly how to understand what happened. I imagine some sort of optical illusion, or maybe God took those big lights like they have in the baseball fields and in order that it should be like daylight there. But it wasn't actually the sun kept moving the rest of the world. It was an optical illusion in this place as if the sun was still up. So it wasn't, in fact, this nature was only disrupted in that place at that time. Okay, so it, in fact, was as minimal as possible. Okay, so here too, you know, Haman is a very spiritual kind of guy. You know, he doesn't really, he believes that there are spiritual forces in the world, like Chazal, but he believes they are available. You don't have to be Jewish or holy even to get them. You just have to come at the right time in the right place and do the right, what am I looking for? Put on the right string in order to get them. But he goes, okay, what did the Jews do in the desert? They gave 600,000 half shekels to build a mishkan. I'll give 10,000 pounds of silver, right? What did the Jews want? What's the highest aspiration human being can aspire for? To reach the 50 gates of wisdom? Fine! I'll also shoot for the 50 gates of wisdom. And so on and so forth. So the battle against Haman, and the battle against Tabaluk in general, is not just a physical battle. It's not just a physical battle upon a physical enemy, but rather it's a battle with a spiritual force which God set out in the world to actually be a contending force to contend for supremacy in the world. And that's why Amalek is called by Bilam, Reishis Bein Amalek, the first among nations. Why? Because he wants to take the leading role, just like the Jews are Reishis, he wants to be Reishis and undermine that position. So, it says here that Memuchan, he said to God, Memuchan was the lowest of them. He was the last one. You see, it was Karshan Al-Shaytar and Moshe Tashish Meret Marzal on Memuchan. She was sorry and horror from our guy, Roy Pneumel, who had this relationship with Hashem somehow, or Shrim Rishinom HaMachus. So he's the last one. He gave the counsel. And Chazal say that's because a fool jumps in first. And that he should have waited for a certain, because he was the junior member of the council. But since he was Hama, so he jumped in. But obviously, he was the junior member of the council, so there are obviously very, very impressive sages or spiritual leaders of the Persian kingdom at that time. And they all asked, what to do? Because she didn't do what Achashverosh said to do, beyond the Sarisim by the eunuchs. But Yomer Memuchah, the Memuchah said, Lifnei HaMelech, the Asarim, in front of God and in front of the officers. Lo HaMelech Levado Tovashti HaMalkah, not just in front of the king himself alone, did Vashti do this bad thing, Ki HaKol Asarim, but rather in all the officers, or noblemen, HaKol Amim, and all the nations, Asher B'Chomriyot and Achashverosh, which are all the kingdoms of Achashverosh. So, it seems that again, he said, for him, Muhammad, which may have melech, right, in front of the king. So, obviously, what Haman is saying is something which has to do with his relationship with the divine. The king, Hashem, gave Haman the counsel to have this suggestion in mind in order that, of course, it's going to turn around and turn against him. And now, Fogel, yeah.
According to this Targum Sheni, the Memuchan isn't Haman, it's Daniel.
That's what the Gemara says. But according to the Gemara, Hatah, we have later on, is Daniel, not Memuchan. Memuchan is supposed to be Haman. That's what the Gemara says, at least in the Gila. So he doesn't make that down?
And it says, as is customary, the king used to first consult with the least important of the advisors, as is customary.
No, so that's totally against what the Gemara says.
Okay.
And Mohammed Gila says,
but weren't they all supposed to be, I thought that they were all his advisors were part of the commander.
Dolman?
That was the later one.
Only Mortified's advisors are the members of the
commander. After he asked his advisors, he still didn't know what to do, and then he asked the rabbis. They were always quite dumb.
Yeah.
Like, we don't know.
You don't have to know where things are.
Be good.
Bertrand Russell said, most of knowledge is knowing where to find things.
You have to just know where to find things. You don't actually know things, just know where to find them.
Tana, Memuchan Zeh Haman. Memuchan is Haman. So Rama Nikra Shmo Memuchan. Why was he called Memuchan? Shemuchan Leporanos, he was prepared for a downfall. Rav Kahana said, Mikan, from here it says here, Shahedyot Kofet Sparosh, that a fool jumps in first. That's why Memuchan jumped in to speak before the other ones. So
here it says he was prepared from heaven to be the instrument of Vashti's downfall.
Well, that's not necessarily a contradiction. Okay. But here's, you know, the, you see here, was at least according to the Gemara was Talmud. Okay, so he says, Ramal Vado of Savashti. Now, I imagine that even though the simple meaning of this is Ben Achashverosh, what it means is that on a different level, of course, Vashti, as we know, is a nasty, nasty lady. And we have this Gemara Selvius that speaks about all the stuff that she used to do, that she used to make the Jewish girls work on Shabbos, and Yosef, and all sorts of other nasty things. I forget what else it says here.
Dress
and inappropriate. Is that the other thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
There'd be unseen when they worked on
Shabbos. Okay, so the, I assume that what, yeah, here it says, right. Ramesh says, Vashti Arishad, Mizio Pnosi Social, bring Jewish girls, Mashita Narumos, strip them naked, Vosa Ben Melacha the Shabbos, and do with them work on Shabbos. Okay, so obviously, Vashti is a bad girl, so she's got to be eliminated. So, Vashti, Amazuka, Kola, Surin, Bechomi, Mashir, Bechomi, Nesamel, Hashver. Besides that, obviously, it's going to cause problems because women are going to start raising their heads and wanting to have equal rights. So therefore, it says,
yes.
I have a question. So, I don't know which was the difference of Vashti and I don't know how to put it, but which problem did she have? Did she have them to go naked in front of everyone? That was her nature.
She didn't have a problem.
That's why. Well, was it because Hashem?
She didn't want. First of all, because according to Chazal, Hashem made her look ugly at that point.
She got leprosy.
She got pale. She got leprosy. Otherwise, she would have gone. Secondly, on a simple level, yeah, she would have gone herself, but she doesn't want to go because Ahasuerus said she should go. So, if she had volunteered, I don't know if that's one thing, but she should go because Ahasuerus said that she's not willing to do. Okay, which is what Haman is playing on here. You know that she rebelled against the king's authority.
I've also heard from my Rabbi Gili from the Shator, he said that Vashti, she was descended of a very famous dynasty, and Ahasuerus himself was kind of a very low stable guy, and now he was, by that was shown that he married her to prove that he was such a good guy, such a, you know, big, noble thing, and he called her, that he first called her by name, and then not, which means it's like to a girl, not to a...
Right.
The real royal prince, and that's why she didn't come. She
was upset.
Yeah.
Right, the same idea, right? Mm-hmm. So it said, Vashti, Malka, Vashti. So that's what it says, you know, what he's referring to is that it says in Post Gedalti days, back on the previous page, it says, Rama said, Rabbi, it's Vashti HaMalka, there is Vashti the queen. And that's what it says, Vashti Mo'ein HaMalka Vashti. Right? She said, oh, you call me Vashti the queen? No, I'm not your queen. I was queen before I made you king. Mm-hmm. Right? You married into the royalty. So therefore, it's not Vashti Hamalka, right? But it's rather Hamalka Vashti. You, Ahasuerus, are only king in my merit. So that was the, like you said, the dialogue which is going on there on a different level. So here, of course, getting back to the book of Zion, chapter 1253, can you take Baram HaKol, the word of the queen will go out of Kol HaNashim, and all women will have so far laying Benin. To degrade their husbands in their life. The king's wife didn't listen to him, so who's going to listen to their husbands? But Amram is going to say, Amel HaKashveros, Amel HaKashveros, Bashti HaMakos, Varev Lovo. She didn't come. By Yonah, there's a man of Saros for us, Madai. Now all the noble women are for us to Madai. Asher Shamu is Varamalka, who they will say, those who heard the words of the queen, the Kol Sarei HaMelech, to all the officers of the king, and it's going to be a sufficient, as it says here, much contempt and wrath. I think the right thing in this book, it doesn't say what, just like they said by Kain last week, what did they say? It doesn't say what they said, what they're going to say. Mm-hmm. What are they going to say? You see, it doesn't say what they're going to say. What do you think they're going to say? I don't know. I really don't know. I imagine that they're going to say that they don't have to listen to their husband, just like Abaxi said she's a Malka, so she doesn't have to come. So they're going to say, we are Soros. You see what it says is along the lines of what we said before. Right? They're not the wives of Soros. The repeated passage says, And all the women, right? Because they're really just women. That's what they are from Haman's perspective. But he's saying, you know what's going to happen now? Just like Vashti, she didn't want to said to be Vashti Amalko, she said, I'm Amalko Vashti. So to these women, the wives of the noblemen, they're going to say, what? We're Sarot Parot Umadai. We're not the Noshim, the wives of Sarim. We are the Sarot. We are in ourselves have significance. That Haman doesn't like very much.
I always thought that
Haman's
wife was more powerful than he was.
Yeah,
she was.
That's why he said that. He wanted to check on her.
That
she's more
political.
She tells him what to do.
Okay, so she thinks that they're smarter than he was, too. Later on, the other thing, like, she knew more. So they're going to say this to Kol Sarei HaMelech, to all the noblemen of the king, and it's going to be, of course, contemptible and will cause anger. So yeah, I don't know exactly what to do with Amalek. I really don't know exactly what this one is about.
Could it be talking?
What?
No,
you've had.
Could it be talking about, like, you know how often Jewish people are considered to be sort of married to Hashem, so we're the queen, he's the king, and then it's saying that the queen is basically showing her independence and saying we don't need the king anymore, we're queens on our own?
Yeah, I was thinking along that line, actually.
So he'll side to all the king's officials, so all of the rest of humanity, if the Jews decide that we don't need God anymore and then we're, you know, powerful on our own, all the other nations who look to us, they would say, oh, even the Jews don't need God anymore, so we're definitely not going to. So it could be.
I was thinking about that. I think that that might be the lines because my theory, although I've seen it elsewhere as well, is that if Melech, when it appears generically in the Megillah, refers to not just Achashverosh, but also to God, well, Malka appears in the Megillah generically, it doesn't refer just to the queen in question, but rather it refers to Am Yisrael, to the Jewish people. So the Jewish people are, so to speak, wed to Hashem, right? We were at Matan Torah, at Sinai, was the chasa, was the wedding, and Hashem was the groom, and Am Yisrael was the bride. And that's why in the Moshul and Shir HaShirim, right, the Song of Songs, God is, you know, the groom, and the Jewish people are the bride. So here too, I think it may be along those lines also that this is a big problem, that the Jewish people went to the feast, even though, as we said, it was a black kosher feast, but nevertheless, they shouldn't have gone there because it was for the wrong reasons. So therefore, this is going to look very bad if we allow this to continue, right? Because it's going to be that the Malka is rebelling in essence against the Melech. And this will look bad in the eyes of the Sarei HaMelech. I don't know the story of Melech are precisely. It could be the sages of the Jewish people. It could be the Malachim, the angel.
Or the rest of the
nation. Or the large, whatever, right? Who could be the so in any event, it's a bad thing. We can't let the Malko rebel against the Melech and let them get away with it. So therefore, Imam Melech Toib, if the client's favor the king's eyes, Yetzeid Var Malchus Milafanav. There should be a decree which comes before him. Because if it does say Paratha Madai below Yavor, it's written in the laws of Paratha Madai, which cannot be transgressed, Asher Lo Tavo Vashti, again, no Malka anymore, right, just plain Vashti. Yifnei HaMelech HaKashperosh, U'machusso, Yifnei HaMelech, and the king will give her queenship, L'Russo HaTavo Mimena, to her friend who is better than she is. And of course here, even though Haman had no clue, it was almost a nevuah, the prophecy, right? Because he's saying that God actually dispensed with Vashti in order to bring a better alternative, right? Who is the better alternative? The better alternative was, of course, Esther, right? So therefore, this is talking about Hashem's master plan. And the king's lesson, or statement, which will be heard, that which he did in entire Malchus. And of course, this is from our perspective, it means that what Hashem does with the new queen is going to create a major holiday for all time for him, which will become known throughout God's kingdom, the Jewish people. And and all the women will give honor to their husbands, from the smallest to the greatest. By Tavid of Arbein Amelch, and this found favor in God's eyes. By Sorim, by Yasan Kamelch, by Mukhon, and God is like Mukhon Bet. By Shlach, Svorim of Midos Amelch, and Chomidos Amelch, and all the countries, ultimately, even though they are Hashverosh's provinces, they're also God's provinces. Everybody should be the master in his own house, and speak according to the language of his own people. In other words, there are a lot of intermarriages. So which language they're going to speak? Like the husbands or like the wives? You know, who's going to win over? So everybody speaks like their husbands speak, not like the wives speak. In fact, in his own marriage, Vashti was a Babylonian, right? She was the second of Nebuchadnezzar. He was a Persian. So maybe that naturally was an issue there. So therefore he's saying, no, from now on, everybody speaks in the language of their husbands, not in their own languages. Now,
this was also another rule, right?
Excuse me?
Also another rule. That the decree was so stupid. Like, that you speak the language of the husband.
Mm-hmm.
Right, it was so stupid. And then we sent out the decree of, we're going to kill the Jews on this day. People don't listen to it. It's kind of how stupid the ritual they do.
That's true, yeah. In other words, he's making a mockery out of himself by sending out this decree. That's a good point, yeah. I didn't think about that, but I'm sure it's true. Yeah.
Because we're talking about the king here saying that he'll take a new queen, like he'll take someone better. So he's saying that, like, if the Jews start rejecting God, God might, you know, abandon us and take someone else. And that this fear of Jews taking, of God taking someone else as his nation, sort of when the Jews re-accepted the Torah through Purim, it was sort of like getting the better queen because now they're more into it. Yeah,
actually,
Rashi was a queen. She was a queen and she did her queenly duty, but she wasn't quite, you know, involved into it.
I like that because that would actually fit into this idea of Haman. In other words, Haman is not, Haman's discussion, discourse on another level is that just like Rashi should be replaced, so too the Jewish people should be replaced.
Mm.
And who is the best candidate to replace the Jewish people?
Jewish people.
Me. No, I'm the best candidate, right? So therefore, I want to take over that relationship which the Jewish people had, and I will have this unique, racist claim, this foremost role in the world. So I like that. Could be that works out very well. Okay, yeah. After these things, the Shulchan come down. Zogar Vashti, the Et Asher Otsa, the Et Asher Nikvav Olea. She remembered what was decreed upon her. And the truth is, it's very strange, because probably Achashverosh, knowing who Achashverosh was, he probably had a large, large harem, right? Probably had hundreds of women, right? Why do you have to have one? Why do you get upset? So one more, one less. What's the big deal, you know? There are plenty of fish in the sea. So I imagine that there's something also here, a unique hashgacha, that he felt somehow that what happened was that the Vashti had to be replaced by somebody else, and not one of the women which he had. And it has to be somebody new, somebody fresh. Then the servants of the king, means the servants of Ahasuerus are also filling a role here. They suggest to the king, don't take one of the ones you already have, look for another one. Yeah? Spread a wide net and start looking all over the place for a different one. Yeah. And the king should send out the clerks in all of the countryside. Because the tools called our robes wrote about Sabasmael Shushan Biro, a base on the Shim, a Yan, a Gay, Sikamel Shim, and a Shim, and the Sultan Kamu Kayan. And they should bring them all to Shushan. And in fact, it says, the Gemara says that this is also part of Hashem's master plan, that there were so many women assembled together. Why? Because Esther compared, not just on her own, because she compared favorably to all the other women who were there at the time. So therefore, everybody else was gathered together in order that Esther should be chosen among them, because in comparison to all the others, she was extraordinary. So therefore, this is all part of the plan that they will also pop. By now, I should be tapping their milk, just a couple more of minutes. By now, I should be tapping their milk, and the girl who will find favor in the eyes of the king, Timel Kachas Vashti, of course, there's such a god in the side that, by Tava Dover Be'enea Melch Hayat King. And this is found favor in the eyes of God. Now, again, you know, this question will cause an effect, because we would assume that Hashem designed this plan ahead of time, right? So even though it says, by the Lord being there at the end, but I'm sure from Hashem's perspective, he really had this prepared from the beginning. And now, of course, we come to Mordechai, and we'll leave that for tomorrow.